coming up on KUCB News, some Unalaskans learned how to identify bird carcasses last week, and there's a fight over cod in the Bering Sea. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM in Alaska. I'm Hope McKenney with some local news on Wednesday, October 9th, 2019. A small group of Unalaskans learned to identify bird carcasses last week in an effort to help scientists track Alaska's increasing mortalities. The training was held by the Coastal Observation and Seabird Survey Team, which observed the state's fifth straight year of mass die-offs this summer. Charlie Wright is a coast trainer.
We're looking at similar situations right now that's really concerning us. And the answer is we're seeing a lot of die-offs, and they're moving further and further north. So now we're seeing that in the Bering Sea and the Chukchi especially.
Wright says Coast trains people in their own communities to identify dead birds and collect data from Alaska down to California. The organization focuses on seabirds because they're a reliable indicator of overall ecosystem health, thanks to their long lifespan and wide-ranging diets.
They're eating various things from zooplankton on up to pretty good-sized fish, and each species is telling us something else about the environment. So if their food is gone, they're not doing well, and they're going to show up on beaches more frequently because of that.
Jill Spetz was one of the four Unalaskans who attended the local coast training. She says she learned how to use a field guide to identify dead birds by their color, feet, and wings.
I mean, there's so many different birds, but it's cool how they're all categorized by the species. For example, like you look at the foot, is it webbed? No. Go to this question. Does it have four toes or three toes? And by the end of it, you found your bird.
Spetz and other volunteers will now survey Unalaska beaches on a monthly basis to collect data and add it to Coast's database. From there, scientists will use the information to study mortality trends and environmental changes. A fight over cod in the Bering Sea is pitting two small Aleutian Island communities against large out-of-state fishing interests, and there could be implications for other coastal Alaska fishing towns as well. As more boats hunt for cod in the Bering Sea, local groups in Alaska are pushing for a portion of that catch to go to a processing plant in Adak. But large commercial operators say that arrangement isn't fair and was handled improperly. The fight was taken up at an important fisheries meeting that ends today in Homer. And as Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, in the meantime, the town of Adak is left in limbo.
In the Golden Harvest processing plant, Mike Lauer shows off piles of decapitated halibut.
This is what they're doing here is they're heading it. So right here we have a guillotine blade.
Like a real guillotine.
Yep. Yeah.
Below the fish guillotine is a deep tote filled with hundreds of slimy halibut heads.
We'll take the cheek out and we'll sell the cheeks.
Okay.
And then we can use the head for bait.
Lauer's in charge of quality control for Golden Harvest, which is in its second year of operating the plant at Adak. In its first year, they processed 28 million pounds of seafood. Most of that, 20 million pounds, was cod. And that's because of a new rule passed in 2016 that said large fishing vessels had to set aside a portion of their cod catch for processing in plants in Adak or Atka. But a federal ruling this year could undo those gains. And now it's not clear Adak will get any cod during the upcoming season.
That's serious money on the table.
Steve Miner is a spokesperson for Golden Harvest. He says the 5,000 metric tons set aside for onshore processors in the Aleutians is a small percentage of the total amount of cod caught in the Bering Sea. But for their business, it's what makes the whole operation financially feasible.
Now, it's more serious to us because it kills us not to have it. than it is to them, but that is what this is about.
The issue goes beyond just ADAC and ATCA. The rule took 10 years to work out among stakeholders at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Less than a month after ADAC's cod share went into effect, a coalition of Seattle-based commercial fishing interests challenged it in federal court. And in March, a judge in Washington, D.C. threw out the plan detailed in the amendment, saying that by singling out a particular community for fishing privileges and failing to promote conservation, it violated provisions of the Magnuson-Stevens Act. Miner says it should worry Alaskans that distant courts and officials are overruling local bodies when it comes to carving up fishing resources.
Remember, these programs grant these companies exclusive fishing rights, and that'll be the same for cod, worth millions, tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars. And we're being told Alaska communities shouldn't get a little tiny piece of the pie? That makes no sense.
But others view the rule as unfair protectionism. Brent Payne runs one of the groups that sued, the United Catcher Boats. He says they challenged the plan because it hurts their members.
Yeah, it's a direct cost or an impact to the Eastern Bering Sea fleet.
Payne's group took issue with the amount of cod that was set aside for ADAC and the way that the island's advocates used their political connections to push through the plan at the North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Payne says his members could live with a smaller share of cod being allocated for ADAC, but he wants that decision to be made through a process that involves competing fishing interests. And he says that is not happening right now. And he adds that so far, the plan's been shot down by federal lawmakers, the courts, and a direct appeal to the Trump administration.
They're 0-for-3. So, you know, they might want to think about talking with us and working collaboratively on a solution here.
The two sides disagree about what's fair when it comes to the cod allocation. But one thing few people argue with is that if the plant closes, the community on ADAC will have a much harder time surviving. 49% of the city's operating budget is connected to revenue from fish processing. Other operations have come and gone in the past, and city manager Leighton Lockett says if the plant closes, the community will struggle.
This amendment created an environment of stability to access a federal resource that motherships and larger vessels, they can move wherever they want at any given time. And you can't move communities. If that were the case, I'm sure a few would do so.
ADAC has asked the North Pacific Fishery Management Council to consider rewriting the amendment in question in a way that can survive a court challenge. But the council moves slowly, and few are optimistic they'll find a solution in time for the start of the cod season in January. With help from Nat Herz in Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes in ADAC.
Now, think of the tools a doctor needs to assess your health or treat you for disease or injury. Broadband may not have been at the top of the list, but for rural Alaska, broadband internet service is vital for healthcare delivery. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin traveled to St. Mary's to learn about the sometimes tenuous links that allow healthcare to function far from the road system.
You can just make out the Andrusky River right there.
Gail Ahlstrom points out the sights while bumping along a gravel road in an extended cab pickup.
So this is St. Mary's, and we have about 550 people here. The clinic is there on the hill. I
know. Ahlstrom is the operations manager at the St. Mary's Clinic, a sub-regional clinic of the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. It has 30 employees and serves a population of 3,000, including surrounding villages, each of which has its own much smaller clinic. They all need a reliable broadband connection.
When things go down, which seems to be a lot, you know, we have to revert back to what we call downtime procedures.
It used to be that downtime mostly disrupted telemedicine, like video appointments and remote consultations. But now even routine visits at rural clinics require broadband service to access the patient's electronic health records. Ahlstrom says she's reminded of it every time an internet outage throws them back in time to the 20th century.
When our subregional clinic opened, everything was paper. You saw the patients, you documented your encounter on paper, and then you faxed it, and then you waited, and then you called to make sure it was there. And then you refaxed it because it probably didn't make it.
Ahlstrom says internet service in St. Mary's is getting better.
I think the last real outage spanned about 3 or 4 days of no internet, no cell phones.
For a town that's not on a fiber optic line, St. Mary's is relatively fortunate. It's one of 84 communities on GCI's Terra network. That's a system that draws from fiber optic and through a network of towers and mountaintop repeaters, beams broadband into villages on microwaves. Stuart Ferguson, Chief Technology Officer for the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium, says GCI's system is a big advancement for clinics, particularly in Western Alaska where it's most prevalent.
Because of that, that lets us go into villages and do more video, do more telehealth, and actually put in electronic health records.
Ferguson says electronic records are becoming essential for patient care.
That's where we can look at their history, their allergies, their meds. It's where we prescribe for them. It's how we do medical orders. It's how we can make referrals to the next level of care. It's how we do consultations. We can't almost imagine doing health care without having these modern tools.
Yet a handful of clinics in Alaska's tribal health system still get their internet via old-fashioned satellite, and they haven't been able to move to electronic health records. Satellite internet is just too slow. But Ferguson believes the next big thing in Alaska broadband will be satellites, specifically low Earth orbit satellites. They're smaller than the traditional kind, Ferguson says, and thousands of miles closer.
The promise is that these will start to appear over Alaska probably in the next 1 to 2 years. And that's a game changer because now you can have high speed, hopefully low cost bandwidths without this latency.
That, he says, could be the link that finally brings the smallest and most remote Alaska clinics up to speed. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Hope McKenney, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.